Yo, what's up, everybody?
Hi, how are you guys doing today? My name is Mary.
And I'm James.
And you're listening to another episode of Watch That Joan podcast.
Yay. It's been a minute, y'all, but we've been busy, mostly because Mary got new news. Murphy, what you been up to?
Not much. I don't know. Sunday, I just decided to... I wore white, and I guess I just married this guy. Nothing much.
Married this guy, our producer, DQ. So congratulations.
Because I always tell him if he blows up, I was like, I don't want people to know who I am. I don't want them to know I exist, or vice versa. Like, I don't want them.
Nigga, what? There's tax documents going to show your names together. Like,
but the general public isn't going to look up those tax documents. I'm like, just how, like, Charlamagne the God, no one knows who his wife is. No one knows who J. Cole's wife is. I want to be like that. Like, I do not want you niggas to know me.
You stupid. As you do a podcast with your face on it.
That's but they don't need to know that we are linked. You know, that you know, so.
Anyway, congratulations on your wedding. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. And you guys had a much deserved rest. But it's time to get back to work and start reviewing movies.
It's your fault as well. I've seen this movie a long time ago, but you were too chicken to watch it. So This is my third time. Well, my second time watching it. So it is on you. You don't understand how many movies I watched that this nigga just never went to go see. Fantastic Four. This movie.
I watched Fantastic Four.
So I guess the movie really wasn't worth reviewing, but still.
So, we didn't review it.
We didn't review that movie because of you. Because you had all you games and a whole bunch of other nonsense. But to be fair, I was exhausted anyway. I was like, I didn't have the time to do anything. So I'm glad that we're finally back. Even today, I'm exhausted. So if I sound exhausted, then you know why.
We know why. You know why. But, you know, it is the fall. That means it is... football season. That's why I got my Eagles jacket on, right? Go Birds. It is always Sooner season, right? OU Texas is this weekend, right? I live in a Sooner state, so Boomer Sooner.
You know,
it's baseball season.
To go to a game, we went to a, I went to a Sooner game with you. And, you know, to go to a game at a school I've never went to see players play that I do not know at all. And, you know, to be in a state that I do not live in or never lived in, it wasn't that bad. it was fun for something that I have no connection to. It was fun. I was just awesome. Oh,
such a gracious review of the OU football experience.
Because why would I give a damn about that? But the fact that me not caring, having no ties to anything happening in that
except
school,
your brother live here.
It was fun.
Okay. Okay, well, it was fun. Is a big deal, in the Murphy scoring system.
Just like, I don't even watch regular football. I mean, to watch college football, to watch 21-year-olds get concussions. No, thank you.
But it's also the fall, which is baseball season, and the Phillies are playing right now. They're down 0-2 to the Dodgers. But it's also, from a movie standpoint, spooky season.
Well, not fall, October. Spooky season.
October, fall. That's like the whole thing.
No, it's not.
As soon as the leaves drops, it's spooky season.
Yeah, I'm but sorry. November isn't spooky season. No one cares about spooky season in November. They want.
I guess.
And
you can still get a little boo. You can still get a little boo from
you'll get like November 1st, and that's it. It's October, guys. So it's spooky season. So we're really going to try to rev up the rest of, you know, the spookiness as we can. And today we are starting with Weapons.
Weapons. Yeah. So Weapons isn't a traditional horror film, like a jump scare, right? But it's...
You definitely was scared and you jumped and put your fist up.
I did jump and I did almost swing at the TV, right? But that's because I was anticipating more jump scares. But it's only a few of them, you know. But it is incredibly creepy, incredibly well-written. And
the thing about this movie is directed by the director who directed The Barbarian. that came out on Netflix, what, like 2 years ago? Time is flying. I don't know what time is anymore. And the director is Zach Cregger. And literally, just like with Barbarian, how I couldn't, in my wildest dreams, predicted the events of that movie, the same is for Weapons.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was unpredictable. It was funny.
It was funny. It was
shocking. It was incredibly violent.
Gruesome.
Gruesomely
it was
violent.
Infuriating. It was just an overall very well thought out film. And if you haven't seen it, I suggest you go in absolutely blind and you know nothing. It was great. Yes. I did it for Sinners, blew me away. Did it for this. Like, the less you know, the better.
The less you know, the better.
Because the less you know, you'll never figure out what's going on. And I love that. And the thing about Zach Cregger, what he also did with this movie and with Barbarian is he likes to play around with timelines. He really likes to switch up the timeline of events and have different characters that you're introduced in a non-sequential order. I was going to say consequential. And then eventually they all meet together and it all makes sense. And it just makes you even more confused and not know what's happening. But when it all comes together, it's like, yo, that was brilliant. Like, that was really
brilliant. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And the good thing is this movie is now on Amazon Prime. You can rent it, I think, for $9.99, and you can buy it for $19.99 if you want to watch it at the crib.
Yeah, it's almost better to watch things at home, you know.
Absolutely.
The movie theater is very expensive. Like, at the airport, we spend $50, me and DQ, for, I got a salad, we got parfaits and water.
Wow. Yeah, no, the world is definitely getting more expensive. It definitely is.
Well, just the movie theaters and the airport is going to rip you off. So watch it at home.
Yeah.
Streaming is everything.
Watch it at home. Okay, you ready to get started?
Yes, I'll start off. In the small town of Maybrook, Pennsylvania, 17 third-grade students from the same class simultaneously leave their homes at 2:17 a.m. and run off into the night, never to return. The town is thrown into a frenzy as they search all over for the missing children. The only student who remains is Alex Lilly. Alex and the class teacher, Justine Gandy, are questioned repeatedly by the police and the townsfolk, but both have no idea where those children ran off to.
So the movie is narrated by this young girl who they never really show us who she is. But she's in the same grade adjacent to this class, right? So she's probably another third grader. And the way she tells it just like, you know, she has this innocent voice. But she's like, none of the adults could find these children. No one knew what's going on. The town was so embarrassed that this atrocity happened. They don't even talk about it.
Because literally, once we get into the film, how in the world can you explain this? How can you explain it?
You can't.
Of course, beliefs are going to sweep it under the rug because you cannot explain these events. Not in a way that people will believe. So
not,
it's like,
not
I
in
understand.
A logical.
Even for like everyday cases, when the police aren't able to solve like very obvious cases, they will kind of, you know, they are embarrassed by it. It's a bad look on the police force as a whole when they cannot solve cases, especially a case as sensitive as 17 children going missing.
Mm-hmm. It's devastating.
But one thing I keep trying to fix my hair, but to no avail. But one thing that I thought about literally like 10 minutes ago before we started recording, what if, like you said, this story is first narrated by a child, a young child. It sounds like a little girl, probably a third grader as well. Yeah. I'm like, what if the children disappeared? This may be far-fetched. It's a theory. If the children disappeared, they don't know what happened to them. They can't explain it. But the third grader, being a third grader, made up her own story. What if she's an unreliable narrator and she's just like, this is what I think happens?
Yeah, that's very true. It's very possible. I feel like with this movie, anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Just throw mud at the wall and see if it sticks. Anything is possible.
See if it sticks. And that's questioning the very, like, narrator who's telling us the story makes sense to me. I think that's within the realm of possibility that we can't believe everything from her perspective, you know, about what actually happened that night.
And I love a story with an unreliable narrator. It really just makes you question a lot of things. Like, I finally finished Wicked, and all throughout the book, you know, Elphaba is a very unreliable narrator. So it's kind of like the shroud of mystery and kind of like myth when it comes to her. Like, some people say she was born with sharp teeth. Some people say that she did this and she did that, and you're never really certain. And like, and it makes sense because, okay, that's why the rumor got out that she is wicked, because no one really knows.
Yeah. Justine Gandy, the teacher of the missing classroom, also does her own investigation. And against Marcus, the school's principal's orders, she follows her student Alex Lily home. Alex refuses to speak with Justine and runs home, slamming the door behind him. The ever-intrusive Justine peers into the windows of the seemingly abandoned home to find Alex's parents sitting absolutely still in the darkness. She immediately calls Marcus, the principal, to alert him about the Lily's disturbing behavior and stakes out the house for the rest of the night. So Justine Gandy, she is played by, let's see. Make sure I got the characters up first.
I should be able to pull the cast up.
Julia Gardner.
Julia Gardner?
Yeah. Yes, Julia Gardner. So Julia Gardner, she also was in the Ozarks.
And you told me Inventing Anna too. That was Anna.
And Inventing Anna. And in both of those movies, she is highly intelligent, but always
just annoying. Yes,
she's a little annoying. She's scrappy.
Snarky. She thinks she's smarter than everybody.
Yes, but she's always under
scrutiny.
No, like under they don't believe in her abilities. What is that called? I'm drawing a mad blank.
Underestimated.
Yeah, she's always underestimated, right? No one really believes her or take her seriously in any of her roles, you know, that she's been in. And I feel like she was the perfect actress.
Yeah, she fits the archetype. She's kind of a mousy looking woman. She doesn't look very big, you know what I mean? Her voice is kind of, she doesn't have, like, have a very, like, I don't know, like prolific or like establishing voice, you know. She does sound seem like someone who could easily fade into the background.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And she doesn't seem trustworthy. That's also very consistent. She does the role so well. And immediately I felt for her, because when they did the parent teacher conference and they were trying to grieve about their children being missing, and reasonably
the town hall. They had like a town hall in the auditorium.
Yes, like a month after the children disappeared, and reasonably so, the parents are not taking no for an answer. They're like, what did this woman know? She is the only adult who is with all these children at one time. And like, you know, as a teacher, she's the only adult who's with all these children at the same time, right? She is her, and they wasn't questioning Alex, but they were questioning her. Like, why is a 17 out of 18
year? The police question Alex just to see if he knew anything. Like, did you see, like, I don't know, like a TikTok of like, you know, the kids being like, let's run outside at this time. Like, I've seen, exactly. I don't know. Jada way called? To do it.
Where people like plan, like it used to be a trend back in 2010s. People like plan, like they walk in a group and they all pause at the same time.
Well, like, it's not like a mosh. No, I get what you're saying. It was like a, I know what you're saying. It was like they'll go somewhere and then everyone would just start dancing.
Mm-hmm,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, a lot of kids, they see trends and things online. Remember when Slenderman was a big thing?
I do.
And like kids were like going into the woods and like doing a whole bunch of weird stuff because Slenderman said to do so.
Yeah.
Kids are impressionable. But no, I do not fault the parents. Like, kids are impressionable. You aren't an adult. So why is it that all your students besides one is gone? You're with these kids 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. She already doesn't have the best reputation. She knows. We learned that she's a recovering alcoholic. And She also sleeps with her ex-boyfriend, who's also a recovering alcoholic, Paul Morgan, who we'll meet later. He's married, and she sleeps with him. So she's kind of, and I know she did it because she's spiraling, because she does feel like ostracized by the public. Everyone's demanding her what's going on. She's scared to go home at night. She thinks people are following her. Like, a bunch of things are happening, but it's also—
people are following her.
People are following her, making threatening phone calls. Yeah, making threatening phone calls and everything. So it's like—
and she has a history of misappropriate behavior at an Everett school, right? She got moved for inappropriate behavior because she would get too close to the students.
They said it wasn't with the students. They said it was another. They did say that,
no, it was a student. It was
no, she, but then they said inappropriate behavior. Yeah, but she said, you know, it was she had a fling with another staff member. But yes, they did but say, she, yeah, she was driving kids home, giving them hugs, being like a mother, like a parent. But it's like you, and I know that's. It's a hard line. It's like, that's it's a fine line. Like, you're not their parent, you're a teacher, but you know, you're.
She cares.
Teaching that's babysitting all. Most of the time, anyway.
It's babysitting, but also you're babysitting 8-year-olds, you're watching them grow up. She cares, and she was invested.
Well, that's what I'm saying, it's babysitting. So you're going to treat them like a mother, you know? A lot of times, school is like daycare. You can't get a hold of these kids, but
Yeah.
So I get both sides. I understand.
Yeah, and I just felt for her, and I believe, right, and, you know, like, she was, her being home alone and people harassing her and knocking on her door, and, like they wrote witch on the car.
In bright red paint.
Bright red paint, which immediately threw me off, because they could have wrote murderer or kidnapper or liar or any sort of obscenities, but instead they wrote witch, which was like, huh, did that stick out to you when you first saw it? Why did it stick out to you?
I didn't think, because I'm like, what the kids did was really freaking creepy. Like, they were all open their doors up and then run like a Naruto run with their hands back, like they're having a time of their lives, running into the night, all of them at 2:17 a.m. I get why he would say you're a witch, like you did something. I wouldn't expect it, you know, bitch, but.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I did not.
Think that could have been a head nod to the audience.
Maybe like a head nod to the audience. Hey, keep watching. Like, just watch this these little subtle hints. You know what I mean? We might tell you what's going to happen. You know what I mean? Just listen. Listen, just watch that job, you know?
But when, so like I said, we're not going to get too much into it, but at some point, Justine's feeling sorry for herself and she hooks up with her ex-boyfriend who's married to a woman named Donna. She texts him like, hey, big head, he comes to the bar. She persuades him to drink and they end up sleeping together. Donna finds out and, there's a scene where Justine's in the liquor store, you know, because she's full into her alcoholism now. And Donna finds her and pushes her down, like squirts all this vodka on her. And she's like, you got him drunk. Like, you got him drunk. You slept with him. You got him drunk. And I'm like, I understand being upset at her, you know, because, you know, your husband is a recovering alcoholic. But I would never do that. I am not going to the other woman. I'm going to that man.
You can hold him accountable because he's responsible for the relationship.
You're the one in a relationship with me, not her. Of course, when I see her, if she says something, sue me. If I see her, it's not going to be no nice words. But I'm not going to fight her. I'm going to that man. You know, I'm just leaving. I'm just out. Like, because she didn't make him do anything. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, she texted you, but she didn't make
him do anything. That's a logical response for illogical. That's a logical assessment when you're in a logical space. But if someone cheats with your man, there's no telling what you gotta do.
I get you, especially if she's the one who texts him, if he's the one who encouraged him to drink, because she was pursuing him. But he said to her, he told her, him and Donna are not together right now, which was a lie. She was just out of town for work.
Yeah.
So
And she's pregnant.
She's pregnant. No, she was trying to get pregnant.
No, she was pregnant.
No, she wasn't. She was trying to get pregnant. She called him and she was like, hey, we should get it on because I'm ovulating. They're trying to get pregnant. She wasn't pregnant.
Okay.
Yeah. While Justine is staking out the Lily house in her car, She falls asleep. The door to the Lily home opens, and Alex's mother walks out, brandishing a large pair of shears. She climbs into the backseat of Justine's car and cuts a lock of her hair before silently returning to her pitch black home. This was so creepy. And the tension that this movie
It was creepy builds, as F.
Yeah. The tension that this movie builds is impeccable. The door just opens.
It's just and like she's just standing there like a weirdo. Just like
walking like a toddler who really doesn't know how to walk yet, but a lot yeah, more scary.
She walked like she was an X. Like imagine like an X walking. Like the actual letter X with her hands in the air. Yeah. Just like wobbling back and forth, you know.
She's walking like she's made of tin or something. Like
a maniac.
And like the door, how the way the door opens, it just kind of swings open all smooth and you can't see anything into the house. It's just like this black portal into mm-hmm. the house. You can't see anything, just blackness. So this figure just appears framed in black, walking very peculiarly, very creepily, brandishing a huge pair of shears. It might be like gardening shears. And she's her hair is all crazy. She looks disheveled. She obviously, if you've seen this woman on the street, you will book it in the opposite direction. Because obviously yeah. something is very wrong and you're not going to stick around to find what is. Mm-mm. And when that girl passed the car, we had a breath, like, whew. Then you heard the door unopen. Oh. Everyone in the theater gasped. Because like, it was just quiet. You see her pass the car. You see Justine asleep in the driver's seat. She passes the car. Okay, maybe she's not going to Justine. Justine. Then you just hear the click of the door opening. I said, that was great. That was great. That was so scary. That was so scary.
So scary. And she's so just knocked out drunk in the front of the car. Just snoring, just dreaming her life away when her life is about to get taken away.
Like, why don't you lock your door, girl? Don't like, lock you know you're going to be in a drunken stupor. Lock the door.
Lock the door. It just, all she does is take her hair and then leave.
She cuts a large piece, too. She cuts like half Joan's bang.
But I feel like she didn't even realize that when she woke up. That's how drunk she was.
Justine's a mess.
She's a mess. Crazy. We are now introduced to Archer Graff, father of the missing child, Matthew. Frustrated by the police's meager progress, he begins his own investigation, reviewing doorbell camera footage and mapping out the neighborhood. He is convinced that Justine has something to do with the children's disappearance, and he confronts her when he spots her at a gas station. Their conversation is horrifically cut short when the seemingly rabid Marcus attacks Justine relentlessly. This is when the movie gets trippy, right? Because Archer, he is a architect or a like a contractor
yeah.
of some sort. And he is detail-oriented, but he's missing stuff, right? His son missing is causing him to order the raw color paint for the projects he's working on. He's off schedule. He's making minor mistakes and signing documents and doesn't.
Some of them are big mistakes. Yeah.
Some of them are big mistakes.
Like they just, already, when building the house, you know, they requested a green door and mm-hmm. he already bought red paint and they painted the door red based on his sign off. So even when the wrong paint was ordered and they asked him, hey, is this it? He still signed it off saying that it's okay. Yeah. And I don't yeah. blame him. My kid is missing. I couldn't care less about work. I don't care. Missing. But it sucks because you still have to work.
You still have to do what you have to do. Mm-hmm. And even like I don't know if you noticed, but like his wife isn't talking to him. Right?
No, he's like disgusted with him.
Disgusted
like
with
he was
him.
Laying in Matthew's bed and you just see her open the door and look at him with such disdain. And she's like, I'm going to work. And like, just close the door. She looks disgusted. She looks disgusted. I'm like, that would destroy my marriage too.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this happens when there's a tragedy with a child and the parents either blame each other for like not seeing it. They blame the husband for not protecting the family. He blames himself. You know, he even like later on, he mentions that he never told his son he loved him.
Which is why his son was a bully. Later on, we find out that his son actually bullied Alex Lilly, the only child remaining in Justine's classroom.
Yep, exactly.
And it's like, oh, isn't it surprising how like you being a jerk to your kid teaches him how to be a jerk to other kids? And yeah. The cycle just continues.
The cycle continues. Bullies become bullies because they've been bullied. Right. And that's how it goes. And it could continue. Yeah. But he takes it upon himself to do this investigation, to look at his Ring doorbell cameras, go to other
after parents. He uses that red paint, the paint went witch on Justine's
yes,
car.
Yes, he used the extra paint to paint witch on Justine's car. Then he just snapped. He realized, hey, I could do something. I have actual skills that I can go and figure out what happened. Mm-hmm. Wherewithal. And he did it. Yo, he was used some surveyor experience.
But it was funny too, because like he went to the police office and he was like, how come I didn't know about this? How come I didn't know about this? And the cop was like, because they don't report to you. Yeah. But it's like, yeah. Yo, my kids are missing. My kid is missing. I would be on you every day. Like every day.
But he was able to triangulate exactly where the kids ran at, right? And he was able to, from the Ring doorbell cameras of his kid and the neighbor, and he was like, yo, the way they ran out, they were in a straight line, as in they were like a moth drawn to a flame, like beeline straight to a point. And he realized it triangulated, and he was trying to figure out where it met it, you know? And
they all took the shortest distance to get there.
The shortest distance
isn't to get like there. Some kids just goofing off. This is methodical in a way that 8-year-olds are not.
Yes. And he realized, hey, I think later on when he meets with Justine, he realized, hey, that triangulates ends up at Alex's house.
He had this weird dream about a gun. What do you think that was about?
Yeah, I forgot about the dream. So he's laying in Matthew's bed and he has a dream and he wakes up and he I don't know. Does he see Matthew and follow him downstairs?
Mm-hmm. He sees Matthew's leaving the house. And then when he tries to follow him, he just ends up right back where he started.
Yeah, he follows him and ends up right back at the house. And he goes back and Matthew's in bed and he apologized to him. And then, but when he follows him, outside on top of his house was like an AR-17 with the time 2:17.
You wouldn't know what gun it is. You've been in Oklahoma for too long.
Yeah. Yeah, AR-15 with the time 2:17 written on it on top of the house. Mm-hmm. Right. It just didn't like it looked like it was like projected onto the clouds, mm-hmm. onto like the fog in the sky. And then he went inside the house and his son was there and he talked to his son. And then for a little bit, his son didn't respond at all. And then he looked up and then there was like a clown thing on the ceiling. And that's when I swung. That's when I swung at the TV. Yeah, that was my jump scare. He looked up and it's just a little clown lady looking at him like, ah. And then he woke up. So I have some thoughts about the AR. Right.
Let's hear it.
So it kind of stems from what you said in the original movie and in the beginning of this episode, that the narrator is unreliable, right? Because, you know, in America, gun violence is a really real thing. And unfortunately, it's a very real thing.
Oh, my God. No, that's so sad. Yeah. I wish you could continue. Oh, my God. That's so sad.
So the AR being up there could be like simulation, right? Like a metaphor for what like could have actually happened, right? Is Matthew the bully? You know, went all the other kids and the, you know.
Because bullies aren't bulletproof. Oh, no, that's Alex.
Yeah, but no.
I didn't think it was Matthew when you said that. I'm thinking somebody else.
Yeah.
I think 8 years old, an AR-15 is really big. I think that may be kind of a huge task for an 8-year-old of his stature. But that's really sad. It could just be like, hey, actually our kids were shot up by some maniac and we're trying to cope and act like they disappeared, but mm-hmm. we know they're dead. Oh my God. And only one kid survived.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, that's the equivalent.
I wonder what other like fan theories are. But what were you saying?
Yeah. But no, that's what, unfortunately, that's what happened in America all the time. And if a whole classroom disappears in the middle of the night, it's more likely that they was a victim of gun violence than what ended up happening at the end of this movie, point blank. And I think that's probably why they did that. You know, that's just a little thing. Like, oh yeah, we're all worried about mystical bump, like creatures bumping in the night, but we should worry about, you know,
these homegrown terrorists.
Exactly, little Timmy going and getting an AR or a Glock or whatever and bringing it to school one day, or the parent or a teacher or something.
What if Justine killed them all?
Yeah. She could kill them all. Who knows? Who knows?
And that's really why they're saying she's responsible.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
man, now I want to look at other people's fan theories and see what's going on. All right. The story transitions to a young man named James, a hopeless drug addict. After a close encounter with local police officer and Justine's ex-boyfriend, Paul Morgan, James burglarizes Alex's house, believing it to be abandoned at first. He finds the catatonic couple still sitting in the spot where Justine saw them, and later finds all 17 missing children in the basement standing in that same trance-like state. Terrified, Paul narrowly escapes the living home and heads to the police station. Unfortunately, police officer Paul spots James approaching the station and arrests him before James can file a report. James tells skeptical Paul that he knows where the children are, and the two of them goes to the Lily home. Paul goes inside to investigate while leaving James locked inside the patrol vehicle. Hours later, night has fallen, and Paul still hasn't left the home. Finally, he emerges and drags James from the car into the home. James is really funny. So this movie is so like gruesome and so sad that they find a very good way to break that up with comedy.
Mm-hmm. And this was they do that by introducing a heroin addict, and it was hilarious.
It was funny. It was sad too, because it's like, man, literally he's so addicted. He lives his life to get high. Everything mm-hmm. he do is in the pursuit to get high. He doesn't care anything else about getting high. Very sad, but they did it in a way that it's still funny.
Yeah, it's so funny. And the way that these characters collide.
Oh, yeah. You want to talk about how James and Paul meet?
Yeah. So,
okay, I'll let you talk to that.
So James is getting high and he's walking around and he breaks into a car and he tries to sell an iPad. And he can't get any money for the iPad.
No, that's before. That's after James and Paul meet. I mean, they originally meet. Paul is like driving around and he sees James try to break into like a warehouse.
Yeah. I thought that was before that part, and then he got to the warehouse.
No. He meets Paul first. Then he's trying to like, he gets away from Paul. Then he's trying to break into a car, sell an iPad. And then he finds out about the ransom for the kids. But.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. So yeah, he's trying to break into a warehouse. And he's trying to climb into the window, and then Paul pulls up in his police cruiser and sees him and says, "Hey, stop right there." And so obviously James the junkie runs, and he gets caught, and Paul arrests him. He goes pat him down. He says, "Hey, is there anything sharp in your pockets that can stab me?"
And James, he's talking about PA. No. It's a shame, but heroin, fentanyl addicts. Listen, there are syringes everywhere here.
Syringes anywhere. Anything sharp that can help me. And he puts on gloves that can hurt me. He puts on gloves. He says no. He reaches in his pocket and he gets stabbed by a syringe.
Immediately.
And the fear in this man's eyes, in Paul's eyes, when he realized he got stabbed.
With a junky syringe.
He just punched. He just clocks a dude. He clocks him and knocks him unconscious. He goes and put a band-aid on, and then he finally comes to his senses.
But after he looks and he sees that was all caught on his police vehicle footage, that's when he was like, I need to make this go away.
So he basically picked up James and said, "Hey, look, right? You're good, right? You messed me up. I messed you up. I'm going to take these handcuffs off of you, but I never want to see you again," mm-hmm. right? And then he left him, and he went about his day.
So... Right? imagine how infuriated Paul was. And he was when he saw James coming back to the police station, maybe the next day or that same day. He's like, yo, what? I told you not to come over here.
Exactly.
And it's a shame because Paul's telling them, I found the kids. I mean, James is saying, I found all the kids, but he has to run.
Exactly. And it reminds me of Sweeney Todd in The Beggar Woman, right? Who she's like, mischief, mischief. She's basically warning people that Sweeney Todd is upstairs decapitating niggas. And no one believes her.
And putting them in their meat pies.
And putting them in their meat pies and making everyone cannibals. But no one believes her because she's a beggar, poor, who cares?
The crazy people like, not really crazy, y'all.
They're not really. No one's really crazy. I'm reading a book that says that repeatedly. No one's really crazy. Mm. Like obviously there's psychosis, but like for the most part, people believe what they believe for a reason, right? And they can get a logical conclusion to what they believe, right? And obviously, even when James called in, he's like, yeah, man, there's a bunch of kids in the basement just randomly staying weird.
So what about the reward money? Yeah, listen, the person who played, I forgot his name that quickly. I think his name, who played James, it's something Abrams. Oh, what is that man's name? His name is Austin Abrams.
Austin Abrams.
I'm like, are you like a real life junkie? Because you're very convincing. You're so convincing. Like how the way he talks, like even he was on his phone lying to his brother saying like, hey, like I need money so I can get clothes for a job. Yeah, for a job. Where am I working? Yeah, you know that place? Yeah. And while he's saying that, he's like, trying car doors to see if they're open. He finds one car open and like he doesn't register at first and he realizes the door's open. He like dives inside. That was hilarious. He's like, wait, it's open and dives inside. And we actually meet James earlier. When we first see Justine go to the liquor store, it's James outside the liquor store saying like, hey, can I borrow some money so I can buy a bus ticket to see my brother? That's crackhead James.
That's crackhead James. I don't appreciate his name is James, but hey, you know. That's what it.
Yeah. So he was the comedic relief that we needed, and I really like how this movie it doesn't just feel like a standard horror film. Like for a while, it felt like we're not watching a horror film anymore, and that may sound like a bad thing because it sounds disjointed and like not fluid, but it actually was really nice. It was good. They did a good job of it.
James being in a house. And he walked downstairs and stumbled in front of all the children.
Oh, when he breaks into the Lily house?
When he breaks into Lily's house and he realized, oh, there's 20 kids down here. And he's like, oh, I gotta go.
He was so scared.
It was so scary.
When he was leaving, so he's about to leave and Alex's parents are standing up. They're pursuing him. And he like drops his silverware that he stole from them, but he still takes the time to pick up his stolen items before rushing out the house because he's a crackhead.
He's
going to get high. Listen, we all need the determination of a drug addict. Like they say, quick, every morning does whatever he can to get high. We all need to be, of course, not with drugs. Of course,
not with drugs. But have that same dedication to like.
Yes, I want crackhead dedication.
Noble means.
Noble no matter policies. What, they're going to get high. Okay, no matter what, I'm going to go to the gym. No matter what, I'm going to do my homework. No matter what, I'm going to get a good night's sleep. Like, yeah, I need crackhead energy without the crackheadness.
So there also was a scene where James. Oh, yeah. So when Paul chases him. He runs into the woods, right?
Oh, when Paul catches him coming to the police station, that was so funny. He's like, what did I tell you? What did I tell you? That was funny.
So because he doesn't want, Paul told his captain, which is also his father-in-law, what happened.
Small town stuff.
And his father-in-law was like, hey, I can protect you until this come out, then I can't. So when he saw James approaching the police station, he's like, yo, man, this dude about to snitch on me. And he got infuriated, right? He could lose everything. So he's running after James. Paul's running after James. Paul runs into his camp out in the woods. It gets into his tent. And he starts seeing freaky stuff. Like that clown lady, once again, he sees her. And like, it's creeping up to him. He just grabs all the needles he can.
She's not even a clown. She's just garish. That's just how she dresses.
Just how she dresses. But like, he has like all the needles waiting for the tent to open.
All his syringes, right.
All his syringes. The tent opens and he stabs Paul right in the face again with all three. Like,
and then they're in the car and he was like, on their way to the Lily house, he has James in the backseat of his patrol car. He's like, do you have AIDS? And James was like, not that I know of.
Like, I don't know if I got AIDS. Like, not that I know.
Like, what? So, like, are you going to take the reward money for yourself? I would have crashed out too. I'm sorry. Yeah. I would have beat James too. Like, it's not right. But stab me in the face with three needles.
Yeah, oh stab you in the hand. I got stabbed by four times with these needles. Oh yeah, he was having a bad day. Ultimately, yeah, very bad day.
Your wife about to leave you because you cheated on her with an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic again. Like, it's not a good day for you, sir.
No. It's not at all. It's not at all. The story goes back in time a bit. After Justine Strain's phone call, Principal Marcus schedules a meeting with Alex Lily's parents, only to be met by Gladys, an eccentric-looking elderly woman who claims to be Alex's aunt. Marcus tells Gladys that since she isn't Alex's legal guardian, he will need to speak to his parents, or Child Protective Services will be involved. During their meeting, Gladys notices ribbon awards in Marcus's office. That Saturday, Marcus is relaxing at home with his partner, Terry, when a distressed Gladys rings their doorbell. Reluctantly, Marcus lets Gladys in and gives her a bowl of water upon her request. Using the bowl and the ribbon stolen from Marcus's office, Gladys performs a ritual that makes Marcus kill Terry. He then runs to find Justine and to try to kill her. So this is when I'm like, what the F is going on, right? Because when Gladys showed up, when Gladys shows up to the school, and immediately you recognize that's the face that was on the wall, on the ceiling.
That's a lady in Matthew's woods, room. That's James. This is a face we've been seeing, but we couldn't place. And now it's like, and I like how they did that. It's like, oh, we automatically know that you're evil because we've been seeing you, you know? And now it makes sense how you're manifesting into a story.
But it's a lady. And as she's talking, I'm thinking, yo, man, if this is like a demon or something like that, I don't understand how she is able to put on a ruse this much.
She reminds me of Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City. Like, she's giving very, very like perky, likable energy, you know? Like, she comes in and you think she's this strange woman because even Marcus's assistant, before she lets Gladys into the office to see Marcus, she like has a, Marcus is like, let her in. And she just looks at Marcus, like gives him a pause. Like,
are you sure?
Are you sure? Yeah. So she seems innocent, but there's something off-putting about because of her clown-like makeup and her lurid orange wig. But, you know, you're just thinking, okay, she's an eccentric elderly woman. She seems harmless. And that's what makes her really scary.
Yes. And she tells a story about how she came to take care of the parents because they got sick. Not deadly sick.
Yeah.
Alex's parents got sick. Not deadly sick, but sick enough that they can't.
She said they have a touch of consumption. Let me see what that means.
Consumption. Yeah, I heard that. A touch of consumption. What the heck does that mean?
I'm Googling it.
That seems like some biblical stuff. A touch of consumption.
So, they're saying it's TB, tuberculosis. A potentially serious infectious bacteria disease that mainly affects the lungs. These bacteria that cause TB are spread when infect coughs or sneezes. What are you thinking here? Why do they call it consumption? They call it consumption because the disease causes severe wasting and emaciation, making it appear as if the body was being consumed by an internal force. That's tough. So she's feeding off of them. She's the consumption. This how it's TB.
She's basically,
she's that internal force. It said because they call it consumption because the disease caused severe wasting and emaciation, making it appear as if the body was being consumed by an internal force. She is that internal force feeding off her victims.
You know what's crazy? There was a scene where they talked about an ant.
The cordyceps?
Was infected by cordyceps. And cordyceps, you know, is from...
The Last of Us.
The Last of Us, right?
That mushroom's very scary.
The parasite. Yeah, the parasite that...
It hijacks your brain.
And this is exactly what she is. She's a parasite, right? And also, a touch of consumption, it threw him off because no one says that anymore.
It's like, how ancient is this woman?
Yes, how ancient is this woman? For tuberculosis to be what her immediate go-to is.
Like, there's not a vaccine for that? There is.
Yeah,
we all got our TB vaccine.
Yeah, like no one gets TB anymore.
I remember there was an outbreak at Northeastern. Do you remember that? Yeah,
I do.
That was so weird.
But tuberculosis took out a lot of people in like the 19th century, 1800s. So I'm wondering, this lady is that old? Has she just been living on consumption, like giving everyone a touch of consumption for her to keep living? It's crazy. But then when she goes to Marcus's house, and she's like, on a Saturday, it's like, let me get a bowl of water. I'm like, there's something off with this woman, yo. Why she want a bowl of water? Like, it reminds me of, you ever seen Pootie Tang?
Oh, yeah, when he set the glass of milk for the whole outside the door. Glass of
milk outside the door.
That movie was ridiculous. Give her
a bowl of water, and she just took his ribbon and, like, did a ritual and just made him puke.
Okay, black. Can you wait. Can you explain the ritual? Can you explain from what you've seen and the times you see? Have you rewatched a movie?
No.
You haven't. Can you explain the ritual? What she does? Like, what does she need? What does it do?
So she takes a bowl of water. She takes a bowl of in water and she has this tree branch that she pricks her finger with blood. And then she takes an object that belongs to her target and wraps her finger.
What do you mean by her target? The person
whoever she's going to control or entice. But she takes the blood and she rubs the blood on the stick, takes the object, wraps it around it, snaps the stick, and puts it in the bowl.
I think that's wrong. She gains control by what you said, having a bowl of water, slicing her hand with the stick, wrapping the person's object around the stick. That's how she controls them. So she took Marcus's ribbon, she wrapped it around the stick, and when she did that, Marcus went, she stayed at attention.
Yeah.
Then she cut a piece of Terry's hair.
Oh, she did walk to his hair and cut his hair. You're right.
So,
forgot about that.
I think you need someone's hair.
Yeah,
you need a target. Your missile attack them. And when she breaks it, when she breaks the stick, I think that's what causes your missile to attack the target when she breaks that stick.
That's when she weaponizes the person.
And it's just so sad because it's like, I feel so bad for Marcus and Terry. Like, Marcus didn't want to let her in her house, but Terry's like, this is not a little old woman. Exactly. Yes, she's weird, but what's wrong with you? She's saying that she missed her bus. She's about to faint because she needs water. Let her in. And any good person would do that. And that's why it's so sinister, because you really put on this persona of innocence and trustworthiness that people trust you in, and you turn against people who genuinely were trying to help you.
Like, I hate her.
I hate her. And how the way Marcus killed Terry was very gruesome. I haven't seen something that gruesome in a minute.
Just headbutted him to death. Just over and over and
his
over.
Face after, in.
Yeah, after puking on him with black sludge and then just boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Crazy.
Like, literally, his face was caved and he didn't have a nose. He didn't have a mouth. His teeth were gone just for the sheer force of his head. And listen, Marcus got a big head. Benedict Wong has a big head. And that's a big man. And then he just ran for miles through the streets.
The Naruto run.
Just running relentlessly to attack her. Face covered in blood and
eyes bloodshot.
Eyes bulging and looking absolutely demonic.
Demonic.
And it's just like, imagine you're just having, you're at an ice cream parlor, just having, some ice cream with your wife, and you see this maniac running down the street. How do you explain that? Like,
you don't. Just like, and even the way he's running with his arms spread out, and he almost kills her. He almost kills her. If it wasn't for
Archer. But my thing is, how did Gladys know that it was Justine that made the wellness call, the wellness check?
So she knew Justine was at the house.
Okay, so you're just like, it's probably her.
She's put two and two together. She already had her hair when she stepped the hair when she saw Bosley in the car. So Justine had it coming anyway, right? I think Justine had it coming anyway, and she like, oh yeah, this is probably the girl who snitched on us, you know.
With Archer's help, Justine manages to escape Marcus, who is struck by a car and dies while pursuing Justine. Archer finally realizes that Justine is innocent, and together they determine that the Lily House is where they'll find answers. Flashback and Discovery show Gladys using objects, possessions bought from classmates, and enchantments to bind and control people. She has been drawing children to the house and keeping them in the basement to feed on them in an attempt to become immortal. So, we can describe exactly how Gladys weaseled her way into the Lily family. And it's very sad.
It is sad, right? Because, you know, the parents, the husband said, hey, we don't really know your aunt Gladys very much.
Is that your aunt?
Yeah, your mom doesn't really know her, but we just know she's sick. And
Have you ever seen a movie? I think it was an M. Night Shyamalan movie. It was called The Visit or something like that.
I have not seen that.
Spoiler alert. You're never going to watch it, so I'm going to spoil it for you. Spoiler alert, if you haven't, I think it's called The Visit. So
these are spoiling everything, so just keep talking.
Yeah. But, you know, they expect for this movie to be spoiled, not, you know. But so these kids, they're sent to their parents' house for the summer. The grandparents' house. The grandparents are very weird. It gets increasingly weirder. So they call their parents and they're like, yo, they're weird. Come get us. And then they looked at them and said, these are not your grandparents.
Oh, F. I do kind of remember that. That reminds me. This is a lighthearted story, but it reminds me.
Is it lighthearted?
A little bit. More lighthearted than what we've been talking about the past 45 minutes. But we were doing a surprise birthday party for Gene, our brother, one of our older brothers. And we was in Atlanta. And me and Mary were supposed to go up to his apartment.
I remember.
Go to his apartment and surprise him. And we walk upstairs and we open the door and we walk into the apartment, me and Mary. And this random old white couple looks at us sideways because we just walked in. And they're like, hey, guys, what are y'all doing?
And we only got away with that because we were children. Not even small. We were never small. But we were children.
No, we were never small. We were probably like 8, 9 years old. They were like, huh? He's like, you just walked into the random person's apartment thinking it was Gene's apartment. You don't know these people. Like, and we just like slowly walked out and was like, sorry. And
I feel like mom was also in the apartment with us. I feel like she also.
No, it was just us. It was just you and me.
Really?
It was just you and me. We just walked in. It was random. That nice old couple. And they were just like concerned. We're like, hi, how y'all doing? Like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, we could have got shot there. In the South, we could have got shot.
Yeah, that was Georgia. That was Georgia. Like early 2000s Georgia.
Yeah, we got shot and not even been on the news.
That was like, W Georgia.
Mm-hmm. W from
Bush.
From Dallas. He's from Dallas.
No, but I'm saying that's when he was in presidency. W.
Oh, yeah. W. You're right. But that reminded me of like basically, whoa, that's not my Uber driver. That's not my grandma. This is in my brother's apartment.
They said, these are not your grandparents. And me and Adonis in the theater, we looked at each other like sheer horror. They was like, wait, who are they? Those are not your grandparents. I said, what the? Yeah. So I'm like, wow. Is Gladys even related to them? So, yeah, you know,
I doubt it.
Because Alex's mother, she was like, hey, I think her mom died. And she was like, my mother would have taken her in. Mm-hmm. If that's her sister and if she's sick. Oh, no, I think they did know him, too, because I think they did know her. I think they actually are related because the husband was like, we haven't even seen her since our wedding. Or she didn't even come to our wedding or something like that. Something like that.
But it doesn't make sense. Because later on, she also said, oh, Alex, I haven't seen you since a baby. How can you see him as a baby if you haven't seen him, whatever, however long they've been married? It doesn't make sense. So I feel like she had some type of spell on him from the beginning.
Like she might have just been lying to Alex.
Yeah, she could have been lying to Alex.
See, I'm going to say it later. But yeah, it also reminds me of Hereditary, one of the scariest movies I've ever seen in my entire life. It's like when you think about Hereditary, the mother of the story, she was never close to her mother. Yeah. So when she died, she felt this sort of like emptiness, like, man, I never got to know my mother. Her mother kept her at a distance. Come to find out her mother was in a demonic cult and the whole entire town was involved. And she indoctrinated you at a young age and she forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Terrifying. It always scares me when the people you think you can trust turn against you.
I know. That's the scariest thing.
Like if someone you know is unknowingly like a vampire or something, but they look completely normal, you'll never know. Mm-hmm. You know? Do you watch From? I'm getting so off topic, but you need to watch From on MGM or Apple TV, whatever.
Okay,
but
anyway, don't spoil.
I'm not saying anything about From. But yeah, so they take her in. They said she's sick, and she's staying with them. And I'll let you continue.
Yeah, so she's bedridden one day, and Alex walks in the room and doesn't even see her. She's bedridden, can't move. The next day he comes home from school. His parents are sitting at the table, fully dressed. She's down, about to make dinner, and she's running the show. And his parents are like blank stare.
In a trance-like state.
And Alex immediately knows something. It's freaking wrong.
And she's what is and wrong that, with my that, that's her biggest downfall. She underestimates Alex. She thinks, oh, he's 8 years old. He can come into the house, see his parents are acting like freaking zombies. And she's just like, hey, what do you want for dinner? Go do your homework. And he's like, he looks at her and he's like, ignores her and say, Dad, Mom, what's wrong with you? And it's like, that's your downfall. You underestimate this child. You think because he's a child, you can lie to him, but he's a lot smarter than you think.
Yes, but she just tortured that kid, man, psychologically. Or how she had both his parents, pick up the forks and just jab their face continuously.
Why did she do that?
Just continuously. To show that she can control them. Mm-hmm. She said, I can have your parents. She told him, I can have your parents eat one another if I wanted to.
And she sure could.
She sure could have.
If I wanted them to eat each other.
I can have them eat one another.
Literally. Right. And it's just like, another thing about this movie that like just kind of brings the horror into real life. Like I said, never trust an adult that keeps secrets with children.
Yeah.
They're up to something despicable.
Exactly.
You know? And it's just people choose children because they're such easy targets.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's how you tell your kids.
Children.
Can you keep a secret? No, I cannot. I am telling every little thing. Everything.
Or tell your kids, yeah, tell me keep a secret, then come tell me immediately.
No, you don't keep no secret. You tell everything.
I know you do, everything. I do, but it's like it depends on the situation. You could say, yeah, I'll keep your secret, tell them immediately. Well, no, because they might do something.
No. I don't keep no secret.
Like, no.
No. Everything I know, Daddy know.
I'm calling my dad right now. Like everything you say. Remember when that episode of American Dad, when Haley's boyfriend, they were like, he didn't know that Roger was an alien because Roger always wore disguises. Mm. And Roger, Haley was living,
he's so
Haley's
stupid, boyfriend
was
Jeff.
Living in a house with them.
Jeff is so stupid.
Yeah, Jeff. So Roger, they were all living in a house together. And Roger's like, yo, I can't walk around naked. Like I wear disguises when I'm outside the house. I don't want to have to wear disguises inside my house. And he's like, I'm just going to tell Jeff. And Stan's like, he's going to tell everybody. He's like, no, he won't. As soon as you tell Jeff, he's on the phone immediately. Like, hey guys, you know, I have an alien. Like telling everybody. That's how I want the kid to be. No secrets.
You love putting in American Dad references. Wherever you go,
I'm trying to reach a record.
Irrelevant. Irrelevant they are.
No, that was very relevant.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was. I'm an illustrating with American Dad. I'm painting a picture with American Dad. But yeah, so, and it's just crazy. Like, it's just sick how people manipulate children because people don't believe children. Think about A Series of Unfortunate Events, mm-hmm. you know? 99% of those children's problems would have been solved if people took them seriously.
If adults paid attention.
If they paid attention. Children, they're trustworthy. And it's sick, you know? They choose kids because they know it's easy, you know? And that's mm-hmm. why I hate predators. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
So, yeah, she's literally feeding off of Alex. Alex is feeding his parents, give them chicken noodle soup, you know, going to school, isolated from his teacher, from his friends, his family. Can't tell anyone about the horrific things that are going on at home. And then one day, she says, Gladys says, the witch says, I thought your parents were enough, but I need more. And he's like, okay, if you had more people to basically feed off, that means you'll go home. And she's like, yeah, I'll go home. And she's like, I need you to gather something from every kid in your classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And poor Alex does just that.
Yep, he grabs everyone's name tag. And even the way he did it, he was smart and like subtle. And he almost got caught.
He waited when they were at recess.
Yeah, they was at gym. And they waited when it was Justine or whatever. And it just so sad. Could a dude is just doing what he can to save his parents. And she told him, if you tell anyone this, she'll kill him, which he has no reason to believe. Yeah, that they had the parents. Yeah. And he has no reason to believe that she's not capable of doing any of that. So he's literally just got to follow exactly what she says until hopefully there's opportunity for him to get away. It's so sad.
It's very sad.
And you can't even blame Alex for doing it, because it as soon as she did the ritual, and they went, and all the kids start running out the house.
Yeah, 2:17 a.m.
Yep, 2:17 a.m. One, how did any other door camera see that they just ran up to the front of the house?
That's one thing. That's the only qualm I have with this movie. They ran down the street.
Yeah, ran on the street.
They ran like, 3 blocks. No other door? Did this single block have no door cam footage?
A dog did. Like if 17 kids ran out our block, all the dogs in the neighborhood was like bark, bark, bark. Like it's
and I feel like
out.
Somebody would have woken up.
Woken up.
Not everyone's at sleep at 2:17 a.m. What about the other siblings? They're probably up playing video games, TikToking. They're up like, what the hell are these kids doing?
Yeah,
someone has to see something. Not everyone is sound asleep at 2:17 a.m.
Exactly. Not everyone is.
But you know what? That's when we suspend our disbelief. And I'm not even mad at it. I'm not even, the story was so good. Who cares? Let's suspend our disbelief.
Yeah. No, you're right. It was crazy. And Alex not saying anything about it and being complacent about it. I get it.
Not complacent.
Cool.
He's being compliant. So keep his parents aligned.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's a G. All the questioning he did by the police and everybody else, he's like, I don't know. He didn't break once, Mary. What 8-year-old wouldn't break like there in my basement? And then everything goes to crap. And she said, there in my basement. They couldn't have helped him. You know? They couldn't have helped him.
I think that's why he didn't break, because he knew that. He was like, even if I do break, he's smart. I feel he's like, smart. Even if I do break, even if I do tell them, police cannot help with this supernatural situation. Mm-mm. There's nothing they can do. So I might as well just play by whole rules, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. Archer and Justine enter the Lily home after Paul beckons them inside. Alex is upstairs with his parents. Once inside, Justine and Archer are attacked by Paul and James, while Alex flees from his parents upstairs. Justine manages to shoot and kill Paul with his own gun, and then later shoots James, saving Archer. The pair find the children in the basement, but they are assaulted by Gladys. Meanwhile, Alex locked himself in Gladys' bathroom, his feral parents only moments from breaking in. With a lock of hair from Gladys's lurid orange wig, Alex performs the heinous ritual that he's seen Gladys perform so often.
The ritual causes the children to break from the trance and pursue Gladys like heat-seeking missiles. Once the children catch Gladys, they tear her to shreds with their bare hands and stand catatonic and covered in blood once the witch is finally dead. After Gladys's death, the children are reunited with families. Alex moves away with another aunt, and while some victors gradually recover speech and their behavior, the town is left traumatized.
I was left traumatized. So.
I was so glad when they got that witch.
Yeah,
I was like, get him. I was like, and them kids literally were soaked. There was this one girl. I think it was Bailey.
Yeah.
You saw her make the quickest route to Gladys. Like, mm-hmm. She was running through people's homes. This is also a moment of comedy before immense brutality. Gladys is running like a chicken without his head. And it's so funny. As soon as she heard Alex snap the stick, her head was on a swivel. And she was like, oh no. And them kids came screaming like a little army of demons.
Mm-hmm.
And some one girl, she was running through someone's house chasing Gladys. And she was about to go one way. And she was like, no. It's quicker to just jump through this window. Like, my body doesn't matter. And she got that hoe.
You've seen her
quickly pivot. And I'm like, that is efficiency. Yes, I'm like, what a spell.
That is military tact. Mm-hmm, tactfulness? No, not tactfulness. Mm-hmm.
No, I think tactfulness is
tactical.
A good word.
Yeah, tactical. That's a military tactical procedure. Just like, hey, I'm just going to breach this window right here. Boom. And then tackle them. And I originally thought, all right, they're just going to, like, you know, beat her to death and scratch her or whatever. They ripped her face apart. They like pulled her from her jaw and ripped her arms.
Yes, they put one like mouth and her lower jaw, one mouth and her upper jaw, and just pulled her hair, what little hair she had, her arms, her ears. They ripped her to shreds like Christmas gifts.
And she deserved it all.
She deserved more than that. She deserved it. I wish it would have burned her too. I said, get her. I said, get her. I was horrified, but I was excited. I was like, no, you gotta get her.
I felt bad for Paul.
Yeah, because he got his face peeled.
Yeah, he got his face peeled by a potato peeler, and he didn't care. But then he got his head blown off. Right? So I felt bad for Paul.
James is hilarious because he was relentless in his attack, just like that crackhead. Archer would just throw him across the room 2 seconds later. Ah, James would get up again, throws him across the room. Ah, that was funny. Like I said, they put in comedy there because they know, hey, you're about to be disgusted, so we got to make it a little lighter.
A little lighter. But even he didn't deserve to die either. All these deaths were just tragic and just like.
Yeah, I think Marcus and Terry were the worst. Like that was so sad. And how Marcus died, when he got hit by a car, his brains were splattered on the pavement.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hit by a car. So what do you think the significance of weapons is in this movie? The title.
And another sad thing is, like, I want to get to your question. It's like, they said some of the kids went back to normal. Like, the little girl said that Alex's parents, she was like, they're still eating soup, but Alex isn't feeding them that anymore.
Wow.
So they're still like that. They're still vegetables.
Yeah.
Some of the kids regained their health. Regained, you know.
Because if she's been sucking a life force out of these people, right? They probably are just vegetables.
It could be permanent loss. Yeah.
Yeah.
The significance of weapons. I think there's a lot. There's so many things jammed into this movie in a good way. Like we said, the whole Archer and Matthew thing. Archer couldn't tell his 8-year-old son that he loved him, so Matthew was a bully.
Yeah.
Think about Justine. It's like, Justine is kind of a trash bag of a person, but that doesn't mean she's a bad person. She's flawed. She's highly flawed, but she generally cares about her kids. So
what they gotta do with weapons. What they gotta do about a weapon?
Oh, I thought she meant like weapons as in the movie. Why do you think it's called weapons?
Yes, why do you think it's called weapons?
A lot of things were weaponized. Gladys weaponized her innocent appearance.
Mm.
She weaponized the innocence of a child to get what she wanted.
Yeah.
Justine weaponized her sexuality to get what she wanted. And the pity that she felt for herself, that everyone hated her because all her kids were missing, she weaponized that to get Paul's attention too. Paul weaponized his leverage as a cop and the fact that he's dating the police chief's, well, he's married to the police chief's daughter to get away with what he did to James.
Yeah.
Something I can think of.
Yeah, no. And obviously, all the people were turned to heat-seeking weapons by the witch, right? So, no, I think all those are really good points. And I think this type of movie that the more you watch it, the more new meanings that you can infer from it. And I was captivated from beginning to end. So what would you rank it, Mary?
It's a large bag of popcorn, undoubtedly. Go watch it now. Go watch it twice. It's really good. Like, and like I said, that's the thing about it. It's very creepy. It's very gruesome. But it's a scary movie that you can stomach. It's not something that's going to keep you up at night for days like Hereditary did or like other movies did. So I think it's scary, but it's manageable. I would say so. How would you rank it on a scary level?
I give it a large bag of popcorn. I say from a scale.
The spooky scale.
A spooky scale. Okay. Yeah. We can say how scary is that, John?
Let's say 1 to 5. 1 to 5 is already. On a spooky scale, I will give it a 3.5.
I'll give it a 4.
A 4.
Yeah.
It was very violent. It was very violent.
It was violent and offsetting. Like, offsetting? That's not what I want.
Upsetting.
Upsetting. Yeah. Just disturbing. That's what I was looking for. It was a disturbing movie. And it just, I don't know. Just knowing that anyone with your hair, like voodoo dolls, can control someone to do horrendous things. And you can't predict it. They're unstoppable. Only way you can stop them from doing what they're doing is to kill them. It's very disturbing. Very disturbing.
To say the least.
To say the least. But I do give it an actually extra large bag of popcorn.
All right. Extra large for me too. Yeah.
Yeah. Extra large bag of popcorn. I think it was, like I said,
I'm excited to see what Zach Gregor does next. Now I'm going to be looking for his name. Like, oh man, we're about to see something that we'll never be able to predict.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It ate. So I know he's gonna do the little stupid pinch thing. Yeah, whatever it is. What does this mean? What is this?
Just ask TikTok. But TikTok. Ask okay. Thank you guys so much for listening. Sorry once again for the break, but also not sorry, you know, like I said, I had to get married, so it was a nice break, but we'll be back for spooky season, and the next movie we're doing is Him. Because that's also available for streaming. So we don't have to leave our house, guys. Yes, this is great.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So thanks again, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Watch That John podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Watch That John. You can follow me on TikTok at JBlog169 to watch our latest episodes. And you can
listen to our show. We should probably change that to like on our, YouTube. Like to like a Watch That John TikTok, not just you. Because, you know, there's two hosts of the show.
You know what, Mary? You don't even have a TikTok, do you?
I do have a TikTok.
Yeah.
But we should probably make a separate TikTok that represents the both of us and not just you.
Yeah, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. I'll make a separate TikTok. Anyway, right. You can follow us wherever you... Let me start that over then.
I was going to include that in there.
Oh, that's fine. Either way, thanks for watching and listening. Until next time.
Bye.